Calcio Land Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the Friday episode of the Calcio Land Podcast. So the last match day of the season is upon us. So we have a great show to wrap things up. We have our dear friend Thousand Names with some really killer picks. We wanted to pay tribute to Chiellini one more time and talk a little bit about Dybala's farewell with our friend Riccardo Pratesi. That'll be in the middle of the show. And we closed. I wanted to end the season with a bang, with a great guest. So I brought back Giuseppe Pastore, the king of the anecdote and the stats in Serie A. So with him, what we tried to do is give some historical connotation to this last match, game day of the season, where so much at stake. Look at some previous Milans, look at previous seasons that ended up so close. I think you'll really enjoy it. I really love doing shows with Giuseppe. And then at the end of the show, I have an important announcement that I hope you stay on for. And of course, we'll do a part of the show only for our patrons. But I'm joined by my dear friend, the producer, co-host of the show, Alex Goldberg. So, Alex, I want to talk to you about Dybala. Earlier this week, I sent you the video of his tearful farewell. And I'll tell you, I was really moved by it. I have found, modern football really challenging to follow. It feels very plastic, artificial in a lot of ways. But that really felt like a true, real human moment. I have to say it got to me a little bit. So I want to ask you, what was your reaction to seeing that?
Yeah, I definitely ahead of time when we kept talking about Dybala's departure from Juve in the past episodes did not really know what level of attachment he felt to Juve. Like, I'm not obviously following Juventus Twitter accounts all day. I don't follow Dybala in socials. I pay attention to Juve, but I'm not really thinking about each player and how much they love Juve. So I was caught a little bit by surprise in terms of just how tearful and sad and emotional he was. Like, I guess if I had thought about it ahead of time, I would have thought, yeah, okay, he spent a good amount of time at Juve, so it will be sad for him. But no, you're right. That was a really genuine, really heartfelt moment there for Dybala. And then, I think back on it, and sure, he was a name at Palermo because he was one of the young up-and-comers. But, and listen, if there are Palermo fans listening right now, I don't mean it as offensive. I hope you know this, but it's Palermo. So it's still like he hasn't got his big break. He's still just a name. He's still just one of these young kids on the Wonder Kids databases and sites. He's just one of those guys. And Juve, of course, get him in 2015. And he does really well. I mean, especially early on, he does really well. And he becomes Paulo Dybala, like the Paulo Dybala that everyone know now around Europe. And sure, there have been ups and downs during his Juventus career, but the tandem he had with Pogba and just so many other players that are now gone from Juve right away, early on in his tenure at Juve, must have been really surreal for him, to go from Palermo to not just Juve, but David, to get Messi shouts. Like, I know Messi shouts and Ronaldo shouts are thrown out for anyone, same way as we hear the next Jordan, the next LeBron in other sports and stuff. So you shouldn't take him too seriously. But, there were legitimate people also because of just the short left-footed Argentinian factor saying, wow, look at this guy. And, we have to remember from his vantage point, like, that's such a big move. And then Juve really become his home, and they have a lot of turnover, managers and players, and he remains there, and he has so many ups and downs. I almost feel like when you have ups and downs at a club, it probably means that much more to you than if you just have ups, 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 or certainly the reverse of downs, downs, downs. So much adversity he went through there. And yeah, I once again think what I just said there, so much turnover. Like, think about the team, the manager when he arrived there to now. A lot has changed. I know he's had Allegri twice, but this club has really just become him in many ways. 2015, we're now in 2022. It's 7 years, and also he's 28, so he was 21 when he arrived there. Like, from the personal angle of things, David, think about that. I mean, think about how different — some people are still the same, but think about how different you are when you're 21 versus 28, and some of the personal things that I'm sure he's gone through. And also, are there some extra tears because he knows he's going to be playing for a rival of Juve? Maybe, you know? Sure, but no, I mean, that was really special to see because it's very rare to see that stuff these days. And also, I mean, I don't know about this, so you can correct me, our listeners can correct me, but despite the injuries and everything, which I know can be really frustrating, he does seem like quite the likable character, and I imagine he has a pretty good connection with the Juventus fans, and that's always going to be something that kind of puts a player over the top as well, right? With one of those goodbyes is like missing the fans. So I got to think that's probably the most important part, maybe.
Yeah, you know, I'll tell you this. Cynically, part of me is like, oh, I'm old. I've seen some great number 10s leave Juve. And, you know, you'll hear Riccardo Pratesi's perspective, which I think is very interesting. And I tend to be pretty close to it. But then I totally understand to a younger Juve fan, someone who's like under 25 or so, Dybala's really been your guy for a while. So I totally get it. You know, people that didn't see Baggio, so their tail end of Del Piero. Absolutely. I totally get that. And I think Dybala really is a good guy. Like with Juve, he showed a lot of attachment to the jersey. So I definitely think there's a lot to what you're saying.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's actually a really good point. Like, kids probably thought Dybala 10 and just everything was so trendy. And, you know, we look at things comparing, as you were just kind of hinting, but comparing maybe the Juve that Dybala was on to the previous Juves and how there were even bigger, you know, more consistent stars there. But like Dybala is still a star to them. That's for damn sure. And I can't imagine just throughout his years at Juve, how many kids just when he's walking through the city, right? How many kids are just screaming his name, wanting him to sign their shirt. And that's got to mean so much, especially when you're 21, when you first arrive there. So, yeah. So David, you know, there have been huge departures. I kind of just spoke on that for a second. I mean, huge departures of Antonio Conte and then, you know, kind of the contingency of players I was speaking of Vidal and Tevez and Pogba and then of course Morata. Where do you think Dybala ranks amongst these?
Interesting question. I posed it on Twitter yesterday to kind of get a sense of where people were at. I was just curious. And look, before I answer, I think anyone that's listened to the pod for a long time knows that Conte and Marotta are two of my guys. So I know I'm pretty biased for them. So keep that in mind. So let's go through them one by one, and then we can talk about how Dybala can fit into that. I personally think if there's the person that's most responsible for Juve's turnaround when they were seventh place 2 years in a row, really struggling, kept changing coaches, I think more than anyone, Antonio Conte was a transformational manager. Some of the players have said that as well, that they really needed Conte to get the club going back again. But if we're talking about level of departure, Conte's probably last. And why do I say that? Because Juve did really well after he left. They had a very strong management team. They had peak Marotta, peak Paratici for sure back then. And they hit a home run with Allegri. I've had a lot of takes over the years. One that I'm probably the most proud of is saying Conte takes you from A to B, Allegri from B to C. When Allegri arrived, it was for the type of manager that he is, that was the perfect time. Juve had won the Scudetto 3 years in a row. Yes, they had struggled in Europe, but they had a really, really good team that just needed to go over the top. So kudos to Allegri. I know I've been very harsh on him, but Alex, I think even you could confirm, I've always liked Allegri and think very highly of him. So a lot because of Allegri, I'm going to put Conte last as far as impact of a departure. Let's get to the players because I think these are really interesting. I personally think that when we look back at history, it's possible that Vidal is considered a more iconic Juve player than Dybala. And I know saying it right now, maybe a lot of people are shaking their heads saying, what are you talking about? Obviously, Dybala was there longer, was the number 10, did very, very well. But I look at Vidal kind of like Conte as one of the guys that really turned Juve around. When I think of like the great Juves, that great midfield, once Vidal left, yeah, they still were still very strong. They still obviously had Pogba, Marchisio, Pirlo, though, was getting older. I felt that was a little bit of a crack in the armor there at Juve. And I know they made a Champions League final after that. So I'm going to put Vidal pretty high. Tevez. I love Tevez at Juve. I thought he was a great, great Juve number 10, the first guy to have number 10 after Del Piero, and absolutely lived up to that. Gave Juve, like, I think Tevez really, really represents so much of what Juve is about with that grinta and that leadership. But Dybala replaced them very well. When he arrived, that's also when they brought in Mandzukic, if I remember correctly. It was the same summer. So they did make a Champions League final with Tevez. They would make another one without him. I don't think he had quite the impact that, say, Vidal had on the culture and, like, the swagger that Juve had. But he was impactful. So I'm probably going to put Tevez behind Vidal, but kind of around the Conte one. Pogba, when he left, he was kind of the last great midfielder from that group. Pirlo was already in MLS. Marquisio, the injuries were really catching up to him. That was a big loss. There's no doubt about it. But Juve obviously made a fortune, and it looks like they might be getting him back for free. How incredible that is, another time around. But I'm going to put Pogba pretty high up, because really after that, that's when the Juve midfield absolutely cratered. I think Marotta, to me, is the clear answer as the biggest impact. Most people on Twitter seem to agree. A lot of people said by a wide margin. Now, look, again, I love Marotta. I think the world of him. I've defended him a lot over the years. But let's look at it this way. He was against the Ronaldo deal. He said Juve couldn't afford it. I think history has proven he was correct. And he was correct even before COVID with that. Juve chasing the plusvalenza and the Bosman deals is really, in some ways, is also the reason why they're not extending Dybala's contract, because they were burned too many times. Since Marotta left, yeah, Juve did win a Scudetto with Sarri. I forget how many Coppa Italia or whatnot, but they've clearly been on the decline. And since he's been at Inter, they have 3 trophies, and Inter had won nothing for a very long time. And the whole time Marotta won at Inter, Juve had the higher payroll. So to me, it's clearly Marotta. Where does Dybala rank in these? I would say right now, because they brought in Vlahovic and Chiesa's coming back, and it looks like Juve is going to get Di Maria. You could say, you know what, and during last season, I kept saying, you know, I'm not so sure Chiesa and Dybala can really play together. I saw a Del Piero Baggio parallel there a little bit. So in that sense, you could say probably not that big of a loss. But, and I've said it before, there is the potential that Dybala is like Pirlo 2.0 as far as the impact on a Bosman deal. Now, obviously, Pirlo was older. But he really could have that type of impact. Like, Dybala goes to Inter, gets back healthy, gets really, really motivated because he wants to stick it to Juve. I think Inzaghi's system could be pretty intriguing for him. So, look, there's the potential that maybe not so much for the impact at Juve, because they have the means to replace him, that he does have a huge impact there. So great discussion, Alex. As always, a real pleasure chatting with you. So now let's get 2,000 names. And I got to warn you, he's ready for the final game day of the season. We always say, take these with a grain of salt if you're using these to gamble. I think one of these today, I think you'd have a very hard time finding a bookie that has this bet on there. So we're going to save the Inter one for last. So 1,000 names. Has Salernitana staying in Serie A? Very, very exciting. This is going to be a huge game. Salernitana hosting Udinese. 1,000 names. Has Salernitana winning 1-0, goal by Verdi. And he says Nicola is going to once again complete his journey and make a whole city dream. And he says Cagliari are going to get relegated for the fault of their president Giulini, and that he says Mazzarri deserved respect. In Italian, Salernitano Udinese 1-0, Verdi, Nicola compie l'impresa e fa sognare una città, Cagliari retrocesso per colpa di Giulini, Mazzarri meritava rispetto. Yeah, I'm going to agree, the heart, I want Salernitana really to avoid relegation. I've loved what Sabatini and Nicola did there, so I'm going to agree, I'm going to go Salernitana 2-1, because Udinese do score a lot of goals. They have as many goals as Juve, I think, right now. So I'm going to go Delafu, and I'm going to give Verdi a brace goal with a left foot and one with a right foot, his trademark. Let's get to the Scudetto decider. I think anyone who's listened to Thousand Name pretty much has a good idea who he thinks is going to win the Scudetto. I'm going to go ahead and tell you right now, I don't agree. First one, Milan going to Sassuolo, Reggio Emilia. When he has Sassuolo winning 1-0, goal by Berardi, and he says that Pioli is going to be robbed by the couple Carnevali Marotta, those are the sporting directors of Sassuolo and Inter. And he says Kalulu and Tomori are going to be made to look bad by Raspadori and Scamacca. And then he said Italian football is more and more corrupt. In Italian, Sassuolo Milan 1-0, Berardi, Pioli derubato dalla coppia Carnevali Marotta, Kalulu e Tomori in balia di Raspadori and Scamacca, calcio italiano sempre più marcio. Have Milan winning 1-0. They're going to have one more clean sheet to finish the season. I love that Leao scored in the last match. I think he scores again here and clinching the Scudetto to Milan. Also, by the way, I really did like reading the story of the Sassuolo fans who helped Milan fans get tickets for the games. I guess they had access to them. It's going to be pretty much a home game for Milan. The last game pick from Thousand Names. Inter Sampdoria 5-0. And he has 3 own goals by Candreva, 2 own goals by Sensi. He says Giampaolo is going to get out of the way with the own goals from the former Inter players. He says Simone Inzaghi is going to celebrate the Scudetto that Marotta gifted him. And he says Moratti, the former English president, is going to be in tears celebrating on Allegri's face. Now, I do think Inter are going to win, but obviously Milan with the win or even with a draw clinch the Scudetto. I'm going to go Inter 2-0 and I'll give Zeko and Lautaro goals. So I want to thank Thousand Names. Oof, what a run. We've really, really enjoyed having him. So now let's talk a little bit Chiellini and Dybala with the great Riccardo Pratese. I'm very excited to welcome our next guest. Chiellini has been a player that I have a lot of affection for. I really enjoyed following his career, and so has our next guest, Riccardo Pratese, who right now is doing a phenomenal job covering everything that's happening in the NBA playoffs, the NBA draft lottery last night. So I really appreciate Riccardo sneaking in and talking calcio before he covered US sports so brilliantly for Gazzetta dello Sport. He used to cover both Juve and the Italian national team on Gazzetta. So he's had a lot of exposure to Chiellini. So my dear friend, it's always a real pleasure to chat with you. Bentornato to Calcioland.
Ciao, thank you for the introduction. And it's a pleasure, as always, to be on in your podcast, that's for sure.
Thank you so much, my friend. So listen, Chiellini is like you, un Toscano. You've covered him at Juve. You've covered him with the Nazionale. If you had to use one word to describe Chiellini, what word would it be and why?
Huge. He was huge physically, and he was huge substantially as a person, and because of his importance for both Juventus and Italy national team for Nazionale. Is huge because, I mean, it was a big mess of a human being, I guess, for being a soccer player. I do cover NBA or NFL, and I'm used to deal with a lot of great sportsmen that are big, big human being. But being a soccer player, they called him King Kong, because it was so big and it was like a wall. I think Giorgio Chiellini has been the last Mohican in soccer in terms of the last pure defender. And yeah, by that, I mean a guy, now the defender is asked to, you know, to be, you know, the first one to start the action. Is required to have good qualities, good skills in terms of being also a playmaker from behind. But when he started, I mean, it was supposed to do what the defender means in substantially. Just, you know, stop the opponent, period, the end. And there was no one, in my opinion, during his time, as good as Giorgio Chiellini to stop the opponent every single game. And I think it was huge in just in terms of being a wall, especially when his team didn't concede a lot of space. It was almost impossible to, you know, to be able to score on Chiellini in his peak, in his prime. And I think he's leaving at the right time. He's still a very good player. Unfortunately, now he's become very fragile. So when he's on, he can play, still an echo of a player. But unfortunately, he doesn't have, you know, the continuity to be the kind of player he has been for so long.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. But I do think that when he does play, there's really not many defenders that I take over him. So very well said there. So listen, you've covered Juve. We've seen a lot of huge figures leave Juve in recent years. You know, Del Piero, arguably one of the three greatest players to be at Juve, period. Definitely in the last years, maybe the most iconic Juve player, Buffon, considered by many to be the greatest keeper ever. But do you think a case can be made that maybe also because so many of the other senators are now gone, that Juve could maybe miss Chiellini, maybe more than they did both Del Piero and Buffon in the past? Do you think there's some potential for that?
It could be, because it's a player, the keeper, as good as Gigi Buffon was, is a guy who stands in front of the post, so he doesn't move. He can't have the kind of impact that the movement player is going to have on the other guys, on the other members of the team. Chiellini was such a leader that his only presence was important to make the other players feeling more safe. gave them the sense of, identity of being a Juventus player, because they've been there for such a long time that it was an example even when it wasn't vocal, and Giorgio was very vocal. So Buffon was a little bit different because his role was a role that does involve, to move, and so he couldn't have such an impact on any other player on the team. The sense of, being a Juventus player is important because, it's like a tradition. It's something you cannot buy at Walmart, like I said, every time. Yeah. It's like, you are from Boston and, the Boston Celtics have a tradition. And something is difficult to explain what does it mean, but it means a lot. It means that something bigger than you is an history of success. It's something that is difficult to teach to others, to the new generation, if you didn't get it, if you didn't live it. And Chiellini did, in terms of what Juventus means and what Juventus meant for so many generations, and now for the youngest generation. So it was a testament to what Juventus is. So I think it will be missed. I was at the stadium as a media for Del Piero last game with Juventus.
Yeah.
And it was, it was something that I still remind very well, because there was the feeling in the stadium was unbelievable. At that time, Del Piero wasn't playing as a starter anymore. But, the gratitude, the love that Juventus fans, supporter gave him that night was something that is still... I still got it in my mind, and I think for Chiellini, the stadium gave him a big goodbye, a fantastic goodbye, and I wouldn't be surprised to see him back in Torino in a different role, in the front office role.
Oh, yeah. No, I definitely agree. I think they've been certainly grooming him to be a director for a while. Well said. So listen, I've really enjoyed Chiellini's press conferences over the years. I don't think it's a coincidence that after every really bad Juve loss, or when Juve was kind of in a crisis, Chiellini was the spokesperson. Usually I always found him that he was not banale, didn't really talk in cliches. I think he's had some very famous moments, like after the Spurs game on the comeback, saying, well, this is Spurs. A lot of people remember the Euro, the Mentiroso with Spain, with the Spain game. Like, he definitely has a lot of personality. But you've interviewed him. You've interviewed him many times. So let me ask you this. What about him made him such a great person to interview? And what were some of your favorite interactions with him?
Well, because it was authentic, it was genuine, but at the same time, like you said, it wasn't just, you know, it wasn't BS. It was, I mean, it was telling you something every time you were interviewing him, some concept, and he put his, his face on every situation. I mean, he was there for in the bad times, in the good times, he was always there. Never hiding himself, depending over circumstances. He was a captain even before he was named the captain, because he was a captain by example. I thought it's something that you cannot teach. It's just a skill that you got or you don't. You can work on it, but you have to have it naturally. If you don't, as much as you can work on it, it will always sound a little bit unfamiliar. That's my take on that. In terms of something, I had a personal relationship with him during my time covering as a reporter both Juventus and Nazionale. Maybe because we are both from Tuscany, I don't know, but it was something natural. I mean, it was something that came out like out of nowhere without, you know, trying too hard. It was just something that came up just like that. And it was great for me because, not because he was an important player, but just because he was a guy who would tell you like it is. Yeah. He didn't sugarcoat it, anything. I mean, I thought about writing a book with him a few years ago. We talked about it with him, and he said, I want to win something big before we do that. It's still not time. And eventually I was so happy for him when he won the Euro.
Yeah.
I mean, already late in his career. And that is something, and that is basically his legacy, because he lost two Champions League finals.
He
lost the other Euro final. I was there in Kiev when Italy lost to Spain. I asked him after the game why, and it wasn't a little bit a tricky question. You get it probably. But I mean, I had to try, and I wanted to have an honest question. I asked him why, you know, in the preliminary round, in the, you know, first round, the group round, you tied with Spain 1-1. And then you look as though exhausted at the end of the Euro in the final. They destroyed you, and it was a ruthless performance. And he said, I don't want to talk. I mean, I don't want to think bad. I don't want to have a bad, you know, thoughts about it. We were not talking about anything. But at that time, they were spreading rumors about possibly Spain, you know, using some substances that, you know, are supposed to be doping or whatever. And that was just a rumor. So me, I didn't even use that word. He didn't, too. But at the same time, I knew very well what he was asking and knew very well what he was responding. And he was honest. He said, I'm a player. I do my job. And my job is to play soccer. If I do start to think about this thing, I start to have suspect, I cannot play anymore. I just do have to go out, do my job, and do it my best, and believe everything is fine. And I appreciate the honesty. Could have asked me, why are you, you know, you want to get me in trouble or whatever. He found a way to be at the same time romantic but authentic. And I really appreciated that.
What a great story. I love it. It doesn't surprise me. Definitely a very intelligent player on top of everything else. So I want to ask you a little bit to close on Dybala, because you and I have talked about Dybala on the pod for a while. I do agree with you. This is one decision that I don't think Juve should be killed on. Quite the opposite. I think, you know, with Dybala's injuries, you've pointed out on the pod in the past that it's been a while since he's had a big moment in the Champions League. You've also pointed out on Argentina Argentina. You know, it hasn't been great. But I have to tell you, Dybala's tears at his farewell kind of got to me in a weird way, because, you know, I feel especially now the sports world to me feels so plastic and fake, and really I don't really identify a lot with it, but that felt like such an honest, human, real moment that I have to say I got a little bit emotional watching it. So I want to ask you, as someone, like you mentioned, you've seen Del Piero's last game in Turin, what was your takeaway from Dybala's tears on his last game in Turin?
Well, we somehow, as a media, we tend to undervalue. We tend to forget that they are still young people, and sometimes I think we see them because they want us to see them, and sometimes they just do that more than anything, just like pro interested in money and fame and whatever, and not necessary about feelings. But at the same time, Dybala came to Juventus when he was a very young guy. I mean, he was a boy, and he's living as a man. And it's something that goes, I mean, beyond what he did on the pitch. It's something that, I mean, he grew up as a person in Torino, representing that club, wearing that shirt. So maybe, looking back, we shouldn't be surprised. I was surprised as you, but after, you know, thinking deeply, I mean, it shouldn't be such a big surprise. At the same time, it was a little bit surreal because there was everything, you know, organized for Chiellini, for, you know, the farewell, that his very last game in front of his fans. And it was, you know, the very last game for Dybala too. So I guess it was kind of embarrassed because, you know, Chiellini decided to live in his own term. Yeah. He was happy, in peace with this game being his very last game. For Dybala, it was different. I mean, I didn't know if he never meant to leave Juventus, but for sure he never meant to leave Juventus in this term. In terms of, they just didn't get a new deal. They couldn't find, you know, an agreement on that. Basically, it was a little bit discharged by Juventus at the very end of the day, if you want to be honest. And because they made their evaluation, they found out it wasn't the right fit going forward for, you know, good or bad reason. Everybody's entitled to have his own opinion. But, I mean, so it has to be different for him to see, I mean, you know, the club preparing a fantastic atmosphere for the captain, and basically letting him go like, you know, he was the last one. And it wasn't Chiellini because of he didn't do, you know, he didn't have the same amount, you know, say the same body of work, that's for sure. But it's been still an important, you know, part of the recent history of Juventus. So I get that he was just in a bad situation, and probably being emotional was just natural. At the end of the day, again, we are talking about famous player, very rich player, but at the same time, still a young man, living situation that make uncomfortable to see from outside. So I can't even imagine what he was feeling inside.
Yeah. So you point, I want to ask you this, and you saw Del Piero leave, and I saw the reaction from a lot of Juve fans is that they felt like Dybala deserved a lot more and whatnot. But I'm with you. It so happened that this was also Chiellini's last game, and I can get while maybe younger Juve fans might have a little more affection maybe for Dybala than they do Chiellini. But you've been very involved with Juve. You've seen big players leave before. Do you feel like Juve owed more to Dybala? Because I kind of feel like it just worked out the way it did, and as nice as I thought those tears were, I'm just not sure Juve should have done a lot more. Do you agree, or do you think Juve should have done more for his last game at home?
Absolutely not. I mean, Juventus is bigger than Del Piero, it's been bigger than Marchisio, and now it's bigger than Chiellini. He can sound ruthless, but at the end of the day, these guys have been the flag for the club, and Dybala has not been that kind of player. It's been an echo of a player, don't get me wrong, but just has not been that kind of player. And there's nothing wrong with that. You don't have to get quote emotional in the moment, if you look at the media from outside, you have to put things in perspective. So I think Juventus did the right thing. It may sound wrong at the first sight, but honestly, if you look at it rationally, they did the right things. And at the same time, I can get that Dybala was, was crying for the right reason. But the two things cannot be necessarily one against another one. They can be two parallel, things that go at the same time. No, I don't think Juventus did anything wrong with Dybala. I just get that they got emotional, and for me, it's a natural reaction. Nothing wrong with that. I get empathy for him, but being empathic with him doesn't mean that Juventus did anything wrong, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. And look, I haven't shied away if there was reasons to criticize him, but I think this probably not. But Ricardo, I can't thank you enough. It's always been wonderful talking calcio with you, my friend. I know this is such a busy time for you with the NBA playoffs, the draft, and also thank you so much for doing it. It's always great. Any of you who are into the NBA, American sports, and you read in Italian, like I'll tell you, I find Ricardo's work just as good as any of the top writers here in the U.S. So my friend, thank you so much for all your contributions. I really appreciate it.
Thanks a lot. Much appreciated.
I couldn't be happier with the last guest that we have before the final match of the season. I wanted to end, this season of Serie A on top. We brought in a lot of new guests in 2022. Had the next guest, Giuseppe Pastore, on a few months ago with the launch of his fantastic book on Milan, which is called Il Milan col Sole in Tasca. Anyone who follows Serie A closely, especially in Italy, knows Giuseppe as the king of the stat, the anecdote, the anecdote, always knows how to put things in historical perspective. So that's why I really wanted to have him on today. So we're going to talk mainly about Milan, a little bit about the season as a whole. Giuseppe told me that he's not too scaramantico, isn't too worried about jinxing, but I did try to ask the questions in a way that wouldn't do that. So Giuseppe, it's always a real pleasure to chat with you, my friend. Bentornato to Calcio.
Thank you. Thank you for this wonderful presentation. Hi, David.
Okay. Well, listen, we're going to talk mainly Milan, but I do want to ask you about Dybala because the other guest that I had was focused on that. I saw your tweet on Dybala and I agree with the sentiment. I'll say this, I find the calcio, the football world feels very artificial, plastic, plusvalenze, agent fees, image, influencers, and whatnot. But I found that Dybala moment to be a real, true human moment. I haven't felt that in quite a while. I can't think of anything that was quite like that, not just in calcio or football, like in general with sports. So I want to ask you, what did you make of that? What was your reaction to that moment?
Sincerely, I felt a lot of discomfort. I don't know if this word exists.
It does.
Discomfort. Because they were not the tears of a player at the end of his career, like Francesco Totti. He was sorry to quit, so he cried a lot. A sort of funeral of an athlete that day in 2017, Roma Genoa. They were not the tears of a player who decided to leave, like Insigne. I'm leaving. I will go in Canada, so bye-bye. It was a desperation, I think, of a player who was kicked out by society, a definitely fragile player, an emotional player, very far from Juventus style, because Juventus style has always been very serious. Austere, few emotions, little space for entertainment, for feelings. Therefore, there is always a hint of embarrassment in situations like these in Juventus. The farewell of his flags have always been controversial. The Piero to Buffon left, then returned 2 years in 2 years. I think this scene will return in the history of Serie A of next seasons. Maybe Dybala will go to Inter, as many people say. or simply return to face Juventus in Juventus Stadium, and then we will see what will happen. A strange thing, surprising too.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And look, you know, I've been following calcio for a while. I've seen some great number 10s at Juve. Platini was one of my first sports idols. So it's easy for me to get, you know, cynical and be like, yeah, okay, there's been a lot of other players at Juve. But that was really pretty unique. And I think you explained brilliantly why. So before we get to Milan, let's look at Serie A kind of as a whole. I think this has been an exciting season, obviously, with both at the top. Scudetto race, we're going into the last match. It's still open. The relegation race has been fantastic. Top four, that's, we kind of knew who the four teams were going to be for a while. So what do you make? And again, you are great at having a historical perspective. What do you make of this season as a whole? Did you find it more exciting than previous ones? Kind of what's your perception of this season as a whole?
Surely it was more fun than other season, because Juventus won his 9 title in a row, all of them with the 3 or 4 match days to the end of the season. It was since 2010 that an Italian championship could not be decided on the last day. It was Inter del Triplete, as we say in Italy, Inter of Jose Mourinho, that in six days will win the Champions League against Bayern Munich. It is the best way to end a championship, anyway, and there's no doubt about this. Unfortunately, it was also a season marked by many serious referee errors, I think. But I hope and believe that none of them will be decisive for the final placings. If the ranking of the standing remains this, we can say that whoever is in the lead deserves to win. I think Milan deserves to win the league. The four teams that occupy Champions League position deserve to go to Champions League. Milan, Inter, Napoli and Juventus. Whoever is the relegation zone deserve the relegation. Venezia, Cagliari and Genoa, all of them deserve to be relegated, because are weaker than other teams. For example, Salernitana, a wonderful story.
I hope that
no errors will be decisive for the verdicts. I think it will be. I hope, as a Milan fan, hope Milan win the league. A wonderful championship. Not so, in Italy we say livellato verso il basso, down level. Last summer, many top players leave.
Yeah.
Left in Italy. Donnarumma, Lukaku, Ronaldo, Hakimi. So the level is lower than past year, but this low level brought the most balance in teams.
Yeah.
It's good. I think it's good.
Yeah, I think it's been a very exciting season, and I try not to talk too much about referees, but I do agree with you in this sense that, yeah, for not just that, I feel like Milan absolutely deserve to win the Scudetto if it goes that way, and most very likely it will. So I want to ask you this. Napoli Outsider is a frequent guest here. He brought up a while back that this Milan under Pioli is pretty reminiscent of Zaccheroni's Milan, the one that won the Scudetto. Mm. Do you agree with that? Do you think that's a pretty good parallel?
Many people have said it, but in my opinion, it is only partially true. Milan in 99 still had big champions, such as Maldini, Albertini, Costa Curta, Leonardo, Boban. Weah had won a Ballon d'Or in 95. So it was not an outsider. But Serie A had many more champions than today, so that was not the strongest team, perhaps not even the best team. AC Milan found a Scudetto on the street, abandoned by Juventus, Inter, Parma and Lazio, that was the strongest team, and won the league, will win the league in 2002K, next league. That team, in fact, was unable to open a cycle of victories. The following year, it came third. It was eliminated at group stage from Galatasaray in the Champions League. A very poor night for AC Milan fans. The following year, Zaccheroni was sacked. He and Berlusconi were not best friends forever, as we say. This Milan now is not the strongest team of the league, but I think it has been the best team. Not the strongest, but the best, at least until now, obviously.
Yeah.
It is also a very young team, has everything to be able to open a cycle because it's very young and is it will buy a lot of new players that improve the team attacking right, for example, or the striker Origi. Mm-hmm. Will be many probably will be the new striker of Milan next season. It reminds me of Conte, Antonio Conte's first Juventus in 2012. The same for two reasons: the same clarity of ideas, its principles, and the same group strength, like a punch.
Yeah.
A big group, a very strong group.
You know, I think you said a lot of great things there. The one that stands out to me is that Zaccheroni's Milan picked up a Scudetto that was abandoned by many teams. And I feel like Milan, this one, they went out and got it themselves. So I think in that sense, you are absolutely correct there. So let's talk a little bit more about Pioli. I said a few weeks ago, and this was when the Scudetto was even more uncertain, that no matter how the season ended, to me, he was clearly the Serie A coach of the year. No one had gotten more out of their resources. So when you look at this Milan, and I think it's a very interesting parallel to Conte's Juve, and like the beginning of a potential cycle, do you think there's anyone at Milan that for this season deserves more credit than Pioli?
It is right to say Stefano Pioli, but I have to say Paolo Maldini. I put them on the same line. One has managed these last two seasons very well, in every point of view. The other, Paolo Maldini, has created this squad and cemented it over the months. And then there was a very brilliant intuition, I think, putting someone like Zlatan Ibrahimovic next to Pioli, who completes himself perfectly. Pioli is calm, serenity, order. Ibra is fire, is war, is fury. A perfect balance that has been guiding Milan for all these months. If the Milan manager had been Spalletti or Antonio Conte, this alchemy could not have worked so well, because they had similar personalities. But Pioli and Ibrahimovic, as a bad cop, good cop, are a perfect couple.
What that the good cop, bad cop, well played there, well played. So Giuseppe, your book is fantastic. It's called Il Milan col Sole in Tasca. I'm a big fan of titles. That's a really good one. It basically means Milan with sunshine in their back pocket. A really brilliant title. You covered the great Milan teams, Sacchi, Capello. I was living in Italy. I was growing up. That was right when I really, really got into calcio. I always say that Sacchi's Milan was the best Italian team I've ever seen in my lifetime. So as you mentioned, there's some very intriguing young players on Milan. Are there some that you think may be good enough now or on the verge of being good enough to be able to have made some contributions on those Milans? I'm not necessarily saying definitely starters, but guys that were good enough to contribute on the teams. Do you think there's anyone that's there already or on the verge of getting there?
Good enough for AC Milan, it means be a legend, because the standard of AC Milan is very high. So It's not an easy question, but this is a great question because they all are very young. I think the closest to becoming an AC Milan legend is Theo Hernandez. His goal at Atalanta is one of the most beautiful goals in the history of AC Milan, I think, in terms of importance and beauty together. It reminds me of Savicevic's goal at Barcelona in the 94 Champions League final, or Kaká. Two goals at Old Trafford in 2007. Of course, those were Champions League goals, final, semi-final, and higher level. But for this AC Milan, the Scudetto would be worth a Champions League. Then I would tell you Rafa Leao, if he will stay at Milan for many years, I hope, or even Mike Maignan. And of course, Sandro Tonali, because he's Italian, a Milan fan, young, idol of the fans. He has it all, pace, stamina, ideas, goals, because he has scored 3 goals in last 4 matches against Lazio and Verona, 5 points. He's one of the pivotal players of this squad, maybe of his age, Italian football.
Very well said. I got to be honest, that was kind of the players I was thinking too. Look, I could see Maignan really, really going down as one of the keepers that we really remember at Milan, also because of the storyline of him replacing Donnarumma. So great shout there. Mm-hmm. So you mentioned this earlier. This is the first time in 12 years that we're going down to the last match day. And the last time it happened, we had a truly historic Italian team. And I don't think we've had a better one since Mourinho. Treble, but are there other final match days that come to mind? And I think you could say, because you said you're not too scaramantico, so we're just saying this for historical perspective. So, you know, we have some newer listeners, newer fans of Serie A, so try to give us a perspective on maybe one or two previous ones that were very exciting till the very end.
Here in Italy these days, many people are remembering last match day of 2000 and 2002, which were certainly very emotional. Simone Inzaghi won the league in 2000 with Lazio, and his brother Pippo lost that Scudetto with Juventus in Perugia under the rain, absurd, biblical rain, after a week of a poisoning week because of other historical errors of referees that poisoned the atmosphere in Italian football. They were different stories, I think. In both cases, Juventus against Perugia and Inter in 5th of May. In Italy, we have a famous poem. It's called Cinque Maggio by Alessandro Manzoni. It's about Napoleon's death in 5 May of 1821 in Saint Helena. Cinque Maggio in Italian football, Cinque Maggio is that last match day of 2001-2002. Inter 2 against Lazio could only win with the draw. It was not enough. The draw was not enough. Where Juventus and Inter 2 were crushed by pressure. And I was very tired for a very difficult season. There were crazy games conditioned by the rain, as I said, young city, and the underestimation of opponents already motivated, calm, like Lazio, which, however, had players like Jaap Stam, Alessandro Nesta, Diego Simeone, Simone Inzaghi too in 2003, play with Lazio, Stefano Fiore. In addition, I think Milan, AC Milan, the situation is very different. In addition to being very well physically, as we saw in last weeks, and in addition to being able to play also at lower pace because they are not obliged to win, Milan certainly will not underestimate their opponent, also because they lost in the first leg against Sassuolo in San Siro. And knows Sassuolo very well, knows his best strikers, Berardi, Scamacca, Raspadori are two Italian national team strikers. I don't see this kind of situation. I'm not scaramantic. I don't think this kind of clouds in the AC Milan sky. I think they are two different situations.
Well said. Well said. And this is exactly why I wanted to have you on. So great stuff. So you've given us some great historical perspective. Now I want to ask you a hypothetical. I'm a huge fan of Antonio Conte. I think he's absolutely a tremendous manager. So I want to ask you this. In your opinion, how many teams do you think Conte would have won the Scudetto with? Well, you know, this is a Serie A that you said the levels may be a little bit smaller than it's been in the past. So I want to ask you this. Do you think Conte would have repeated at Inter? I think I don't have any doubts there. Do you think at Napoli he could have been able to win the title? And do you think Juve, maybe he could have had a resurgence? And do you think at Milan he would have been able to do as good a job as Pioli? So let me ask you this. You replace Conte with any of the teams in the top four. How many of them do you think he wins the Scudetto?
Certainly, yes, with Inter. Even if he then left precisely because they sold him Hakimi and Lukaku last summer. So I don't know could win with a weaker roster of the team. Maybe even with Juventus, which he would have been able to motivate better than Allegri did the players. I think Allegri was also lacking of a tactical level this year. Juventus had not a good season, absolutely.
Yeah, I agree. Napoli, what about Napoli? I think that's the most interesting Napoli, one. What do you think?
Naples, I don't know. Napoli, I don't know. Because Luciano Spalletti is a very underestimated manager. He recreated a winning mentality that Naples never had in the last 30 years. But he changed the mind of a lot of players. So I don't think Antonio Conte would be better. So much better than Spalletti. It's 75 points, more or less. It's a huge number. I don't think Conte would be the Italian champion with Naples. Certainly not with AC Milan.
Milan, I kind of agree.
As I said before, there was a need for a calm, a serene coach like Stefano Pioli in order not to put too much pressure on a talented but young team. There was a sort of miracle, a wonderful balance that a maverick as Antonio Conte, a cavallo pazzo, as we say in Italy, a mad horse, shout to make noise.
Yeah, he's intense, that's for sure.
He's not so well. He's not fit to AC Milan. AC Milan has another history, comparing with the Inter or Juventus. They need coaches like Pioli or Carlo Ancelotti, the most the greatest of the coach of AC Milan coach. Conte is another thing. It's another story for other teams.
Well said. Okay, let's close on this. Your superb book has been out since late February. I've read it. I've really enjoyed it. It brought me back to those days watching Milan. And look, I followed calcio closely back then. I learned a ton with that. So tell me, the book's been out. You've done events. You've heard a lot of feedback on it. What's the feedback, review, comment that you've heard on the book that surprised you the most?
Let's remind it, Il Milan Console in Tasca, 66 and Second Publishing on Amazon and other bookstores. I really like when people write to me that this is a funny book. Funny book. First of all, because I actually think it's a very funny book. And secondly, because I really enjoyed writing it a lot. So I hope the reader has at least half as much fun as I enjoyed writing it. There are a lot of pages, a huge number of pages. So it's not an easy book, maybe, but it's funny. I think it's funny and has an adventure, has a travel. So when people say to me it is funny, I'm pleased. I'm very pleased of that.
Well, listen, and if you are in the U.S., you can get this book on Amazon. I wanted the physical copy. You can get it. Mm. You can get it on Kindle. So all of you that already speak Italian, this is a great book for you. If you're learning Italian, I think this is a great way to continue your journey on learning. You'll learn a lot about Milan and you'll have a few laughs, as Giuseppe mentioned. But listen, I can't thank you enough. You know, Giuseppe, one of the goals of the podcast for me is to bring on people that in Italy are fantastic that people don't get to hear in English. I always want to give people kind of a perspective on what it's like to talk calcio when I go back home, and you did a fantastic job. So I can't thank you enough for being the last official guest of the season. So thank you so much, Giuseppe.
Thank you.
Keep up the great work, and I look forward to talking to you soon.
Thank you so much, David.
Okay, so I have an important announcement to make. This is going to be the last Calcio Land podcast ever. As far as I know, that's what's going to be the case. We are going to have one epilogue episode next week at some point with Napoli Outsider, 1,000 Names, and Alex, of course, to wrap things up. But it's been a long run. I want to thank everyone that's been listening to the pod for a very long time, all our patrons, anyone that's tuned in, anyone that shared the pod, anyone that's been part of this community. I really appreciate it. We've been doing this pod for 5 years. When we started, we were one of the very first Calcio podcasts. There's been a ton since. There's a lot of great choices. And I want to thank everyone that supported us throughout the years. The reason I made this decision, it's kind of twofold. I don't recognize myself in modern football anymore. You know, the sports washing, the money factor, how much the game has changed. I just don't really recognize myself in it anymore. You know, I've been thinking a lot about the letter Cesare Prandelli wrote when he resigned from Fiorentina, and I want to read a little bit of it because I think it really expresses in so many ways how I'm feeling now. So I'm going to read it first in Italian and then I'll translate it to English. And this is what he said. Sono consapevole che la mia carriera di allenatore possa finire qui, ma non ho rimpianti e non voglio averne. Probabilmente questo mondo di cui ho fatto parte per tutta la mia vita non fa più per me e non mi ci riconosco più. Sicuramente sarò cambiato io, il mondo va più veloce di quanto pensassi. Per questo credo che adesso sia arrivato il momento di non farmi più trascinare da questa velocità e di fermarmi per ritrovare chi veramente sono. So what does this mean? In English it says, I'm fully aware that my career as a manager could be coming to an end, but I have no regrets and I don't intend on having any. Probably this world that I have been a part of for all my life isn't really good for me anymore, and I don't recognize myself in it anymore. Certainly, I'm the one who must have changed, and the world just goes much faster than I would have ever thought. This is why I think the moment has come for me to not be taken away by this speed and to stop, to refine who I truly am. Now, granted, I haven't had a career as long as Prandelli's in calcio, but I've been doing this for 10 years. I've been doing the podcast for 5 years. It's been a great run. I feel like football has changed a lot again since I started the podcast. And honestly, I don't recognize myself in it anymore. I find myself not willing to do the research that I used to put in to do the show, stay on top of things as much as I used to. And I really do have a lot of respect for my listeners and the people that have supported me. So if I can't do it 100%, I can't do it. I don't want to do it at all. And the other thing is, you guys, anyone who's followed me realizes how much I really, really hate social media these days. I felt like it really was not good for my mental health. I find in general, social media is just really driven nowadays motivated by outrage and resentment are the main currency. I feel too that social media now has become really a stat game, people trying to find ways to get interactions. And I feel like so many people just say, you know what, I want as many interactions, whatever you get out of that, and they don't care about the cost. But, you know, I've been saying for a long time, the energy you surround yourself is eventually the energy you become. And, you know, I've quite frankly, I have not been happy being on social media for quite some time. And, you know, the thing that I've realized the older I get is I'm certainly not, I don't have enough power to change modern football. And I certainly don't have enough power to change social media. But what I do have power over is changing myself. And the best thing I can do is just remove myself from it. Whatever doubts I had on if this was the right choice or not were kind of ended once I had a conversation with my friend Rav, who used to run the UVFC website. That was the first place I ever wrote an article. We had a chat last week, and it was like incredibly obvious that I'm making the right choice, at least at this stage of my life. You know, my only reservation was my ego. I certainly like the idea that I'm known for this. I like, you know, when I go into different cities, you know, I have hookups, connections, but honestly, all that pales in comparison with, you know, the price that you pay for that these days. You know, the older I get, I also realize that the amount of energy that I have is limited. You know, I have a full-time job in finance that I feel I do well, that I really enjoy, that takes a lot of time already. For the past 10 years, I've invested a lot of time in football. I've never done it for the money. Whatever money I've made on here, I've either used to pay the people that I've collaborated with or donated to charity. I don't say it to be a hero or anything like that, but that's kind of how I've decided to do it. So I've invested a lot of energy in it, and I just want to, whatever energy I have at this age, at this stage of my life, I want to use in another place. You know, I look back, this has been a great run for me. You know, I'm someone who grew up in Italy, but was based in Boston, Massachusetts. You know, I've done some things with football that I never imagined possible. Earlier this week, I ended my gig on the Di Marzio site. I can't tell you how many times, you know, I spent in the summer doing the evening transfer blitz. It was very rewarding. I did it because I really wanted to have a great platform for the podcast. I knew I would have a big audience thanks to that. That was always my goal, to then use that audience for something else. I purposely never had Di Marzio, Fabrizio Romano, any of the big guys from the Di Marzio side, because I wanted this podcast to be just mine and just be built on my ability. But I do realize that I had a big audience thanks to that. But I worked very hard on that for a long time. So I want to thank Gianluca, Fabrizio, everyone on the Di Marzio side. I'm humbled to have had colleagues of their caliber. You know, my dream when I started was to write on ESPN. Back then, 10 years ago, all my idols, writing idols, were there. Bill Simmons, you guys know, is my absolute hero, and I really wanted to write for ESPN. He wasn't the only one. I used to watch the show on Sunday morning, the sports reporters, and you know, these were all writers on ESPN, and I really idolized those guys. And I can't tell you how much it meant to me to have my articles on ESPN prominently featured, mentioned on the TV network. You know, sometimes I felt like I was looking at myself outside my body. So I want to thank Di Marzio, but I want to thank all you guys for your support that got me there. You know, also writing for The Athletic was incredibly rewarding. I had some amazing editors there that really pushed me. Some of the work that I did, I'm extremely proud. And the other thing that I'm really proud is having the respect of my peers through the podcast. I've been lucky to meet a lot of the top journalist through this show, became pretty friendly with them. And I can't tell you enough how much I appreciated that they treated me like I was one of their own, not any lower, different. They never looked at me as a translator, which is very often used to, you know, make me look bad. And that's fine. If you want to feel that way, that's fine. I did it to build an audience. I'm very proud of the other work. So I want to thank all the top writers who've been so incredibly courteous to me. The respect of my peers, to me, is the biggest reward. And the other big reward was being able to do shows in Italy. You know, I was growing up in Italy and I was always kind of like the foreigner. And to be accepted in Italy as someone who could talk calcio with them on many shows multiple times, they didn't invite me just once. So I guess I must have done a few things right there. So I'm very proud of that. The friendship that I have with the guys at Vox to Box is something that means the world to me. I've made a lot of friends with so many guests on the show that I'm still very close to, and those friendships are going to continue. You know, ironically, you know, I think a lot of you know that I grew up as a Juve fan, but like a lot of my Juve passion started to kind of end when Luciano Moggi went there, because I saw him as a completely different style from Gianni Agnelli and the classy Juve that I used to see in the 80s. And it's incredibly ironic. This football world is really, really crazy. About 7 years ago, Moggi messaged me, invited me to go meet with him in Milano. I had a lot of trepidation. And, you know, I'm not going to say we're friends, but we are friendly. And it means a lot to me. He's insisted multiple times to have me on shows with him. You know, we exchange, you know, wishes at the holidays. It's just really weird. It's been really, really a great journey, but the friendships are really ultimately what matter the most to me. And also having a little bit of influence on younger people. Like, look, I knew Alex Goldberg was going to be a star the first time I did a show with him. And this was years ago, where he was like a producer at the local sports radio here. There was something about him that I knew he had talent. I knew that if I ever started a podcast, he was going to be my partner, although he didn't have a big Serie A background. As much faith as I had in Alex, I have to say he exceeded my expectation. He's done incredibly well, done much better than I ever could in the football world. And knowing that I had just a tiny little bit to do with that means the world to me. Same with Marco Messina. I've known him since he was like in high school. Again, Marco was going to become a star, definitely, even if he hadn't met me. But, you know, having had influence on them means a lot to me. It also means a lot to me that through our patrons, we've been able to support a great charity like the Insuperabili. We've raised a lot of money over the years. I'm very proud that during COVID, when so many freelance writers lost all their job, we were able to pay them a little bit to keep writing on our site. That meant really the world to me. So if I come off a little douchey and I was celebrating these things, it's not my intention, but I am looking back. I am very proud of the hard work that we put into the show. I certainly don't feel like a victim. Just because I don't like modern football or social media doesn't mean that I don't feel like I'm a victim. I don't at all. I'm incredibly grateful for the journey that I've had. But, you know, I also have to focus on what I can control, and I want to try out doing something different. So I'm not sure if this retirement is going to be like Motley Crue's, not last very long, or if it's going to be like REM. I have a feeling it's going to be more like theirs. I'm also proud. I knew very likely that these last few months were going to be it. So I really wanted to push myself to bring in more guests, different guests from Italy. One of the big objectives that I had on the podcast was, you know, to kind of give you a sense of like how calcio is talked about in Italy. I purposely tried to invite a lot of guests that you never really heard in English and really give you a sense of that. And if I did, I'm very grateful for that. So we are going to do one last episode next week, but it's going to be very different. It's going to be with Napoli outsider Alex and Thousand. I'm not sure if it's going to be on just Patreon or for all, but I really wanted to take an opportunity to thank everyone that supported the show. It's been a long time since I purposely tried to hurt someone on social media or in general with something that I said. To those people that I did a long time ago, my more than sincere, heartfelt apology. Anyone in recent months, even with good intentions, that I've offended, I certainly apologize. I can tell you one thing that I've learned recently is whatever the benefit is of owning someone on Twitter or winning a Twitter debate, whatever that is, absolutely pales in comparison with the hurt people feel when they're on the receiving end of bullying or like being owned and all. And it's just something I don't want to be part of anymore. So I want to thank everyone that supported the show from the bottom of the heart. It means a ton to me. And, you know, arrivederci, as we would say in Italy. Goodbye for those of you that don't speak Italian.